Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Imagine being in a partnership that went sour and in a marriage that was ending in divorce, and you needed a launch to break through, and all of a sudden seeing those sales come in. That's what happened to our guest today. Lori Kennedy is an amazing female entrepreneur. She's going to show you how she built a multiple seven-figure business while working and ending her day at 3:30 p.m., not working Friday afternoons, not working weekends, not being a slave to the business. You're going to absolutely love this. She's one of my most successful students from the mastermind that Bedros and I ran years ago. And you are going to be inspired by her. You're going to learn how to be a great leader. And you're going to learn her mistakes that you won't make because of her. Everybody, meet Lori Kennedy from the wellnessbusinesshub.com. Let's jump into the show. All right, so now we're going to speak with Lori, who has built a multi-million dollar company and a loyal tribe of followers, all while working far less than the average employee. So Lori, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You did an absolutely amazing job at our mastermind the other week and dropped so much information that I wanted to kind of cover some of it, and we won't have time to cover all of it, but really share it with our listeners who want to get more done, who want to make more money, whether they're inside of a company, whether they're a beginner entrepreneur, whether they're already doing a couple million bucks a year. They're going to love it. So first of all, what the heck is your business?
Sure. So we run a business development company for health practitioners and coaches who want to establish and grow online. And I started out as a nutritionist and grew my practice and my program and really fell in love with the whole business side of things. And so that's what we've been focusing on for the last couple of years.
Yeah. Why don't we walk through how you grew from Wow Nutrition, you know, what that was what you were running when I first met you, and you got a lot of help from Bedros and you were in our mastermind. So walk us through a history of that, and then we'll jump into from there some of the mistakes that you may have made along the way, because everybody loves to hear those things and learn from those.
Right. Okay. So I have never had a corporate job. I have been in the health and wellness industry since I was 19 years old, although I've been fired from many a jobs. Pre-19, I was fired from all the jobs. But I started personal training. I got my first personal training certification from the YMCA when I was in university. And I had a personal training job almost all throughout university. I traveled around. I personal trained in Australia.
Oh, cool.
And I came back and I worked for a women's only gym as a trainer. And then I had a job as a contractor for a startup company setting up their massive fitness facility. So I guess that would be the closest thing I had to like a proper, you know, employable job. But it only lasted like a year. And then I went back to school to become a registered holistic nutritionist in 2007. And so from 2007 to 2015, I had a nutrition practice. And very quickly, I realized that the model, the one-to-one transactional model that I was taught, that all health practitioners and coaches are taught, was not going to give me the quality of life that I wanted. And I realized very quickly, not only was it really challenging to get clients, but it was like a revolving door of clients that meant that I had to consistently go out and like hustle for clients. And given, you know, the hourly rate that I was charging, it really didn't make any sense to me to do that. And so, you know, a couple of different things happened. I rented a clinic space and I wasn't able to pay for it because I didn't know how to get clients. And so I went back to the gym that I was previously training at, and I took over the nutrition position. And gyms run like a business. I did not run my practice like a business because I didn't know that I was supposed to do that.
Right.
And so gyms run like a business. And I had a manager who said, you're not meeting your sales goals. And so I didn't know what that meant. All I knew was that there was zero chance of me meeting my sales goals selling at my hourly time for $150. And so that's when I really looked at the model that the gyms were running. And I said, okay, well, this has to change. I have to figure this out. And the only example that I had at the time was Weight Watchers, because this was in 2009. And so I modeled my program off of Weight Watchers, and I used their group model and their monthly fee model, and, you know, to really change the business model of the way that I was running my nutrition practice. And very quickly, I had filled two groups, which meant that I was helping 24 people in 2 hours a week versus 24 hours a week, which is a huge difference. And slowly my colleagues started to notice that I was seeing dozens and dozens and dozens of clients a month and working part-time. And they started asking me like what I was doing. And this is years, you know, years in, we were in multiple locations. Also, because when you run a group program, you can automate it. And even though this was like pre, you know, automation, pre-ClickFunnels, pre-everything, I manually automated my business. I had scripts, I had contracts. I did the same talk over and over and over again, just like a webinar. And I manually automated my business so that I was able to hire other people, teach them what I was doing, and they could run the program for me in other locations. We ended up licensing it out. And that's when I came upon you and Bedros, because I realized I was onto something, but I still had no idea what I was doing, like zero clue at all. I remember the first time hearing like what AWeber was and what email marketing was in 2012.
Yeah.
And I had gotten the business to like six figures and then some, but I was stuck. And so that was really the turning point in 2012 for me. It took me 2 years to transition full time online and doing what I'm currently doing. But that's really how I got my start. And, you know, I feel like I've been online a long time. And yeah, that's really the backstory to how I got here.
Now, one of the things that we haven't covered is, and when you were in the mastermind with Bedros and myself, is you did have a partnership, and Bedros and I are big on warning against partnerships. What was your experience in it, and what would you do going forward?
Never have a business partner ever. That's what I would do. If you want to collaborate with someone, that's fine, but you profit share and you don't have a business partner. The reason that I had the business partner was because I was birthing children during that whole time. Okay. And so she came in to fulfill like a lot of the things that I was doing while I went on like fake entrepreneurial mat leave. And so we ended up starting this company, which was called Wow Weight Loss, which was the name of my program. And again, because I didn't know what I was doing, we had no formal agreement. We were just 50-50 like shareholders in this company. And we each contributed intellectual property, although the majority of it was mine coming into it. And so very quickly, I realized that the partnership wasn't going to work for a variety of reasons. And I remember specifically asking you, what do I do? And it was September. I remember this, September 2012. And you're like, get out of it. And I flew home and I called her. And it was just a complete and utter nightmare from that point forward for a year. It was horrible. And it was all the money, like all the money that I was making from everything was going into this. And it was just a really bad situation. And I remember sending you, oh my gosh, it's like bringing back such memories. I remember sending you my first copy of my sales page and like literally sweating through my shirt because I had a Hail Mary, which was my first launch of my online program, which had to give me money. Like I was running out of money because all of our stuff was frozen and we were in this bitter legal battle. And it worked. And I remember you guys taught me how to create a product. You taught me how to run an online launch. Like you taught, I was like, okay, I'm done. What do I do next? You're like, do this. Okay, I'm done. What do I do next? And I remember it was December 26th, which is a day after Christmas. And I sat on my couch and I made $13,000. I'll never forget.
Wow.
PayPal, like from PayPal, you know, sales page right to PayPal. And I remember watching the transactions come in and being like, oh, it worked. Thank God. Thank God.
And we love those stories too, because there's something magical about that first sale online. Now, yeah. When you have them, a whole bunch of them at once, it can totally change your life. And then, so what were like a couple of quick lessons that you learned from the first business that allowed the second one to become so much more successful and allowed you to kind of run it on your own terms, which is the way you do it today?
So the first thing is have an automated program. Like my ticket to freedom has been knowing how to create automated programs, whether it's online, offline. You have one program, you deliver it 17 different ways. You know, I remember something you also taught me, like get lazy. And I got lazy. Like I had one program that we made $1.5 million off of. You know, just one program, continuously running it over and over and over again. Now we have the same thing. It's a bit more high ticket, but we focus on one thing. And so that's the biggest lesson is if I could go back in time and change one thing, I would not try and sell 5 different things and make a little bit of money from each. I would really go all in on the one thing and make it the best one thing that I could ever possibly do in my life. And figure out how to add value to that one program. So maybe you have some upsells, but if I could go back and change one thing, it would be to not have a curriculum of offers, especially when I was first starting. So that was a big lesson.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Now, another thing that your business is built on these days is the client-centric mission and core value. So you started off in the nutrition space of helping the end user. Today, you help world-changing, life-changing nutritionists and, you know, wellness coaches change more lives. So you're really getting that ripple effect. You're helping so many more people. What is the client-centric mission that you have? How did it evolve? How did you create it? And then how do those core values that you and your team have, how do they drive your business and the decisions that you make? And why are they not just, why are, you know, some people look at them and say, oh, it's just some fluffy stuff. But for you, and for me too, it's something very important. And I think that you actually even have a better approach to it and have more results from it. So I want to learn from you too.
Sure. So our mission really came out of my own struggle, you know, In the health and fitness and coaching world, none of us are taught business. And so we are really left up to our own devices when it comes to being successful, because having educational knowledge does not, unfortunately, does not translate into dollars in your bank account. And so for me, I really had to learn the hard way. And I wanted to be able to spare my colleagues that struggle. And that became really clear when I had colleagues asking me, like, can you teach me this? Can you show me this? And it didn't feel hard to me to do that. Like, it really came easy. It still does. It comes, this whole online business thing, I get it. It comes easy to me. And I know that that's not the case for a lot of people. And so for me, the mission...
Why do you think it comes easy?
Because
your mind works that way, or is it something that you've taught you've learned over time?
I think both. It never occurred to me. Like, I know people are really afraid of things, right? Like afraid of looking like an idiot. Sales, afraid of this, yeah. Afraid of that. Like it never occurred to me to have those feelings. Like it was just, and maybe it's because I had a gun to my head the entire time, which helps, yeah. You know. I had just had a baby and we had a mortgage to pay and I had to contribute and this was my career. And I don't know. I'm not scared to look dumb. I'm not scared to ask a lot of questions. And I think because I really always had a reason why, it didn't feel so daunting to me. And I guess because now the impact that we have completely just reinforces everything that I do. But maybe because it was really, it really came out of the nutrition thing, wanting to spare other people the health troubles that I had gone through as a young lady, teenager. And then with the business, I just know that it's so possible. And if you could just get over yourself and just get over all of the stuff, the stories that you have in your head, like you can be more successful than you ever thought possible. And I truly believe that. And so our mission really is centered around transforming the way that health practitioners and coaches think, feel, and behave while building their business. It's so much so that we have it outlined, like how we know when we will succeed, right? Key phrases that we keep see popping up in our community over and over again. We're like, oh my God, they're using the language. They've transformed their mindset. You know, like we have these markers that are helping us to measure our impact over and above, obviously, the revenue, which is great, but it's more than revenue. It really is coming into an industry that is mostly female. You know, if we remove the fitness profession, you know, practitioners and coaches, they're mostly female. They mostly don't have a business background, and they mostly don't start out with the self-worth and confidence, believing that they can have massive impact and be very successful. And so those are the two things that we want to change, and we have to do it from a skills perspective, but also of the mindset perspective.
Do you see the same things reflected in your clients that when they have their back against the wall, they are more successful? And do you see people that have everything going for them and they don't succeed? Do you have an explanation for why that happens too?
Yes to both things. I, from my own experience and also from seeing sort of the patterns in those specifically females that are successful, it is this innate drive. It's this innate level of competition and drive and just this desire to make it happen, whether there's a gun to the head or not. I think I have some clients who are really successful that it's not about the money. Like they don't need the money necessarily, like in the same way that I did. It's more, they need to, like the gun is about proving it to themselves. And there is zero chance that they're going to fail because that's not who they are, right? And so then there's these other people who say they really want success and it looks like they're very busy, but they refuse to invest. They aren't coachable. They really aren't putting themselves out there in the way that every single business, like we're all saying the same things, you know, like we're all saying the same things. We just say it in a different way, but they say that they want it. And there is some level of lack of self-worth, low confidence that is holding them back, physically holding them back from doing the things that will move the needle. So they do all the other things and then complain that they're so busy, but they're doing the wrong things.
And then how many people or what percentage of people are able to make that leap? Because I know there's a lot of people on the fence listening to this in some area of life, and some of them will make the leap and some of them won't. I guess it doesn't matter what percentage of people do is, but more is what's the thing that finally gets some of your people to move? Is there a common element there?
I think there's two things. One, it's a decision. It's a decision to do it. And it's a decision with the understanding that this is part of the journey, like failure, looking like an idiot, like all of those things, getting no's, right? Like that's part of it. And it's those parts that it create the success. So it's making the decision to move forward, knowing what the journey ahead sort of entails. And then the second thing I would say is the reinforcement of experience, is doing the work, right? You can, that's how confidence is built, through capability. So you don't get confidence when you haven't done anything. Right?
That's a great line. Do you use that in your world, that confidence is built through capabilities?
Yeah. So I learned that from Dan Sullivan. I'm not going to take credit for that one. So first you have to make a commitment. Then you have to have courage to follow through. And when you follow through, you build capability. And it's in building the capability, showing yourself that you're able to do it. Like, oh my God, I did it. I did the Facebook Live and I didn't die. Okay, maybe I'll do it again, right? Or I made that first sale. I asked for $3,000 and she said yes. Oh, okay, maybe I can do it again, right? So it's in the doing of the things where you start to build the belief that this can happen. But when you're so scared to do the actual things that move the needle, so you busy yourself in all the nonsense that doesn't matter, you're never going to build up that capability because you're not actually doing the actions to build the capability.
Got it. Perfect. Perfect. Now, you know, we are in a crazy times these days. And so how have you seen your people respond? Like if there were maybe three different categories you would put people in or even just to the people that responded well versus those that haven't, you know, what can we learn from the people that haven't responded well? What can we learn from the people that have responded well to the quarantine and all this?
So this is a really interesting question. And I was thinking about this a lot, just in the sense of my own response and the lessons that I've been able to pull from COVID and seeing my community. So the answer to that question, I think, is boundaries. And I'll just explain. So before COVID, I'll speak for myself and then I'll say sort of what I saw in my community. Keeping in mind that a large majority of my community are mothers. So us going through COVID is in a different experience for most other people. So for myself, I am so glad that I had super tight boundaries pre-COVID, meaning I already didn't watch the news. I already don't dive into drama. I already don't hang out with people that are negative and scarcity and doom and gloom. I already changed my life to be isolating from the people that don't sort of keep me in my growth energy state, if that makes sense. Like I already did that work, right? And so I noticed that those people that have already made those shifts were able to handle COVID that much better. Again, you know, all things being equal, unless they had someone ill or they're like giving birth to a baby during this time, like those are extenuating circumstances, you know? But for the people that were just sort of riding the wave and the people that had already made those shifts to create these boundaries, they were able to like drill down, focus, show up because they realized that COVID is just another, I don't want to minimize it by saying bump in the road because that sounds horrible because, you know, this is disastrous for a
lot. Well, I'll say it is just a bump in the road. Right. It's just a bump in the road. It is.
You know, like, it's just another sales objection, basically.
So is cancer. You know, it's a bump in the road. Okay. Someone's going to get it, you know, and you're going to get over it because what else are you going to do? Quit or not?
Right. So, you know, a percentage of my community and myself, we went into full on entrepreneurial, like, how are we going to handle this? And my financial advisor said something which was totally put it in perspective for me. He says, you never let a good crisis go to waste, which was like genius, right? And this is my finance guy. He's like, don't let this go to waste. You never let a good crisis go to waste. And I was like, you're right. So what are we going to do? How are we going to lead? How are we going to shine? And I saw a percentage of my audience, my clients, let's say, do that, where they're like, okay, low barrier offer. Okay. 12-month payment plan. Okay. This, that, and the other thing, like free summits, free this, like they went into the right actions. You know, they went into leadership mode. They went into pure, like primal entrepreneurial, like it was amazing to see them not only have to navigate now their spouse is home and their kids are home, but they're like, you know, nose to the grindstone. It was great. And then there's other people who are paralyzed. And I think that the people that were paralyzed is because they didn't make that switch yet to really that growth minded bump in the road. How am I going to grow out of this scenario way of living. They're still stuck in the watching of the news, the doom and gloom, engaging in hours of debate over whether this is real or not, whatever the circumstances are, and they're allowing themselves to really get sort of taken away by the current of COVID versus standing on their own island and saying, okay, how am I going to control this situation? And in life, like you said, you know, bad things happen. Like, I went through a divorce. My marriage blew up 6 weeks before a live event where he was very much a part of my brand. It's like, you just carry on. Right. And so.
And you probably turned that crisis into an opportunity, like, because people probably respected you so much more for when they may have found out, even if it was years later, they would have been like, wow, you did that. More power, more respect.
And I think anytime we can thrive through a challenging season, it also builds your resilience. Like, it builds your chops. It gives you like no one can screw with me. Like, I built this business. Not even the fact that I've built this business. I did it while divorcing and raising my children. Like, you can say nothing to me, you know, that would like you this, you that. Mm-hmm, okay. Whatever. Right. So because of that scenario and because of those people who are going to thrive through COVID, they're going to have a stronger backbone. They're going to ride the next wave with more grace, with more leadership. Because when you can thrive through challenges, they just build. And it gives you perspective. Like, even with COVID, I'm like, whatevs, I've been through worse. Like, it's fine. We'll just deal with it. I've been through worse. No big deal kind of thing, you know?
This is one of those a decade in a year moments for all of us. Just like, your divorce was a decade in a year. Like, you know, all of the stuff you have to go through. You know, the learning, the leadership, the growth. If you use it that way, right?
And you know, we're seeing, I'm sure you're seeing evidence of this too. Like, we're seeing evidence of those people who were like, how am I going to be better after this scenario versus, oh, COVID, it sucks, whatever, the negative side of it.
Yeah. All right, let's talk boundaries in general. So even before this tight schedule that you had, great delegation, team autonomy. So we would love to hear, you know, what does the workday look like? When is your magic time? How did you make this happen? I know you and I have had a lot of conversations in our coaching stuff about being the Oprah of your life. And I think you really took that to heart, probably as well as anybody I've ever chatted with. So would love to hear your success tips there.
Yeah. So I think for anybody who's struggling, who feels like you just can't breathe and like, you know, it's just chaos. For me, I really had to go back to, and I got this from Craig, you know, the whole, like, what is a perfect day? What is a perfect month? What is the perfect life look like for you? And not every day is perfect, but I think a lot of people don't even think about what it would look like. And then when you have it on paper, you can actually create a plan to make it happen most of the time. And so fortunately, I've known Craig since 2012. So I had that early on drilled into my head. But I started online. I was running two businesses. So I had my online business and then I had my full-time nutrition practice, which was like full on, 9 locations, 24 licensees. Like, it was full on. And I was single and I had 2 kids. So I had to figure out how to have more time in the day. And I started waking up at 5 in 2012. Because basically Craig told me to, and you know, it was one of those where I was like crying and he's like, just wake up at 5. So I did.
What were you getting up at before then?
Like whenever, I don't know, whenever I woke up, like, I had 2 kids, they never slept through the night. I woke up when I could wake up. And I always felt like behind the 8-ball, you know, and I always felt like stressed from the minute I opened my eyes because I was being reactionary to the day. And even now it's interesting, like when we go on vacation and we all stay in the same room, like I'll still get up early and I set the coffee machine in like the bathroom so that I can like get up early. Cause I actually can't get up with my children anymore. Cause I hate it. I need that time in the morning. So I wake up at 5, and from 5 to 7, this is non-negotiable. My children, even when they were little, they got a bowl of cereal and an iPad or the TV and I didn't care. And they sat in front of that TV if they woke up early. From 5 to 7 is my magic time. And I write the words that bring revenue into my company.
I love that.
You know, that's what I do. So either whether that's video scripts or a webinar or a sales page or emails, that's it. Like five, you know, so I'm spending a good chunk of time during the week writing words that bring money in because that's my job. My job is to build the brand, get the, you know, and nurture the people and bring the money in essentially. And so that's what I do in the mornings. And then, you know, if we take COVID out of the picture, you know, I work until 7:30 and then I turn into mom. So from 7:30 till the kids would go to school at 8:30, I would be mom. And then I would drop the kids off and I would come back. And in the morning is when some days of the week I would have meetings. So Mondays and Thursdays and Fridays in the mornings, I would usually have meetings from like 9 until 11. And then Tuesday was blocked off completely. Like I talked to zero people on Tuesdays, not during COVID. And that would be for more content creation. Like that would be my day to like brainstorm, think, whatever.
Where did you get that idea from?
I got it from the fact that I needed it, like for my sanity. And also because we create a lot of content and I never wanted to outsource the writing of the things because I like doing it. Like that's part of my job function. Right. And so for me, I want one whole day a week to myself where I can go and sit at Starbucks or a park or whatever and like brainstorm and think. I need large chunks of white space because the rest of my life is so planned minute by minute and day by day that it doesn't allow me to have the level of creativity that I want in my business.
Because you're with your kids so much, right?
Yeah. Like we're not during COVID obviously, but we like my son plays high level sports. So we're constantly on the road. Like our lives are planned out really heavily. And so I needed one day a week to myself to have space and time and to just be in the flow and to like allow my brain to just go wherever it needs to, because I didn't have that at any other time. So Tuesdays is like my day to myself. Wednesdays is my coaching day. So I only record podcasts. I only talk to people. I only have meetings with outside people on my team on Wednesdays because that's all I do that day. So I can stay in the flow. I don't have to toggle back and forth between like creativity, trying to write and like meetings. So that's Wednesdays. And then in the afternoons on Mondays and Thursdays is like client work time. So if I have to review stuff for clients or whatever, it's like client work time. And then Fridays I have mornings, meetings in the morning until 12 and then I'm done.
Okay.
So that's, and I have a coaching call on Friday that I run at Fridays at noon. So I'm done by 1. So Fridays I'm done work by 1. But that's really, and my work days end at 3:30 because that's when my kids get home from school. So it starts at 5 a.m, but I'm done at 3:30 because that's when my kids get home and then we have to eat and then we leave for hockey.
Yeah. And then, so obviously you're not a one woman machine. You do amazing work. So talk about first of all, let's go back to when you were starting and you mentioned at the mastermind, there were a couple of key hires that you did at the start that gave you sanity and space. And then talk about the team that you have right now and how you've been able to find great people and then keep great people and grow great people.
Yeah. So when I first started, even with my nutrition business, I hired my aunt because I am horrible at admin. And before even I knew that I shouldn't be doing like $10 or $15 an hour tasks, I realized that, you know, I shouldn't be doing them and I'm very bad at them. And so I hired my aunt to do like all of my scheduling, all of my billing, like customer service. So that is the first person that I hired both for my nutrition business and then my online business that I have now, was somebody to do all the admin customer service. And I also think too, it really saved my sanity because I am not the kind of person that, and I think it's because also like what I've been through in my life, that if you like complain, I'm just going to give you a refund and that's the end of it. Like, I have a low tolerance for that. And yeah. I'm not good at customer service. Like, I'm really bad at it. I'm compassionate in some ways, but like, I'm like, really, you don't have time? Figure it out. So I hired her and that was really helpful because she kept me organized. She kept me on track. She did all of the admin things. And to be honest, it helped me feel really professional because I had someone booking calls, following up, doing the billing. Like, I remember you saying like, Donald Trump doesn't hold the briefcase. Like, I took that on even before I heard you say it. Like,
remember saying that, but that's great.
You told me that a while ago.
I love it.
I didn't want to be chasing people for money. I was their nutritionist. I wasn't like the accounts receivable person. So I just felt like intuitively, it just destroyed my credibility when I'm chasing you for $199 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So I hired her very early on, even though like I really should have kept all the money. I knew that I didn't want to have to come home after seeing clients for 8 hours and then do paperwork. Like, I didn't want to do that. So that was the first person that I hired in my nutrition business. And by the time I was done, she was working like 25, 30 hours a week, which was really great. Not only to help her, but to help me too. And then when my online business really started to take off, I was married for a brief moment. And he ran the tech because it was either like, you have to quit your job or I have to hire somebody full time. And I'd rather us just take the money. So that was probably lasted about a year. And then I brought in Michelle, who is now the COO of the company. And so she took over all the tech, all the customer service, all the admin, and she was full-time. And then I had somebody else part-time, Jessica, who turned into an events manager actually. And she started doing basically everything else, like helping me with social media and just like literally anything. Like, I just needed help. And it wasn't like I could have written a job description because it was still very new. We were still scrambling. I still didn't really know what I was doing, but it was way more than one person could handle. And because I had two small children, so I could really only work, you know, 14 hours a day. I couldn't work 18 hours a day because I had to take care of them. And we got to $1 million with just the three of us, basically. And we had some contractors, like we had a graphic designer that we, you know, contracted, and we had a tech person that we contracted when we needed help. But really it was just the three of us. And then the next person I brought on was Leanne, who also was part-time, who helped with also like content, social media, moderating our Facebook group, like just more front-facing customer service stuff. And that's really like, I had two people, one full-time and one part-time, and we got $2 million that way.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Now, what's your meeting rhythm with the team and how, I mean, they are so bought in. What's the secret sauce there, Lori?
Honestly, the secret sauce is the mission of the company. And I also think like, it's the culture of what we do. Like, we joke a lot. We're all virtual. And I think it's just that we really value the team. You know, somebody asked me the other day, like, do I owe my success to anybody? Do I feel like I owe my success? And I said, I owe it to my team. Like, I owe where we are right now. I mean, sure, I'm at the driver's seat and it's the vision and stuff, but there's zero chance that I would be where I am without them. Mm-hmm. And I think it's them feeling really secure and knowing that, like, we think about how to create culture. We think about how to make them feel safe and secure and give them opportunity and ask for their input. And it's not sort of like a dictatorship where it's like, I'm the star of the show and you're all here just working for me. That's not how it is. It's a company. It's a team where I think maybe other people who are more sort of influencers, they just have people sort of helping them. And it doesn't maybe, I don't know, cause I'm not in anybody else's company, but what it looks like is maybe it's perceived that they're just there to support that one person, where we are all equally important and we work together to achieve our mission. And that's been since day one. Like, it's not just the Lori Kennedy show. And I think
well, what are the things that you, Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that you do, and you know, I'm really excited to learn about it even more and use it with my team, is you did this quarterly business assessment with your team. And so they must value being able to have the input. So talk a little bit about how they're able to have a say in the business and how these five components work in a couple of quick minutes. I know we don't have much time left, but it'd be really cool to know.
So we do quarterly evaluations with everybody on the team, even contractors. And so when we do our quarterly evaluations, we ask them to give us feedback and rate on a scale of 1 to 5, you know, how they think that we're doing in these particular areas. So it's lead gen, nurture, sales, program, and ascension. So those are the five areas. And we always ask for feedback. Like when we're project planning, like if it's a project that involves like, you know, marketing or anything, we go through it with the whole team before we set it in motion. Like before it's an approved project, everybody gets to review it. Everybody has a say. So it really does feel like we're it is that we're valuing other people's opinions. And it's not just, okay, I'm going to do this and here's your job tasks, right? So we don't just task people things. It's a collaborative approach. And I think that's why they feel so connected and why they feel so bought in, because they co-created it with me or whoever their sort of departmental manager is, right? Like we're constantly asking for their feedback. We're constantly asking them, how do you, like, you're the front lines. You tell me, like, how can we do better? What am I not doing? Like, where am I messing this up? What are we doing wrong? You know, I don't need to hear the praise. Like, we're not, thank you, but I don't need to hear I'm doing a good job. Like, you need to tell me where I can do a better job. And I think that's how we've always done it. And they feel then safe to come with ideas. They feel safe to say, hey, we need to improve this, or I think you missed the mark here, or what about this, or what about that? Because that's how we've always done things. It's just, I'm constantly asking for, what do you think we should be doing that we're not doing? Where can I do a better job? You know, and I have even my C-suite leaders evaluate me as the CEO. Like, I want the feedback. I want to know, like, I evaluate them, they should evaluate me, right? And so we have this really nice sort of cyclical relationship where they are asked for and really praised for their feedback, and we take it and we use it, and they see that and they like it. So they feel like they're heavily contributing.
What blind spot have they helped you see in the last 12 to 18 months?
A lot of it has to do with our processes. We've brought people in who are just so incredibly skilled. They come from a corporate background. You know, yeah. I've never worked in a corporate office. I don't know how these things work. So it's really in our efficiency that they've really, really helped to say, hey, like, we could make this a lot more efficient, simply because they have a skill set that I don't have. And we created things based on whatever is in my head. And so when we bring people in who are better skilled in certain areas than I am, they're able to show us sort of our inefficiencies, and they improve processes, they improve systems. Our moderators who are in the Facebook group day to day, they give me ideas. Like, they contribute so, like, you know, they have to give me ideas. Like, that's part of their job, is they have to give me ideas. So we made it part of their job. Because they're in the Facebook groups. Like, I'm not in them, so I don't necessarily see what's going on. And so in our weekly editorial meetings, like, you know, or even just in our Slack channel, they're always popping in like, hey, this was a really good thread. You might want to like create some content around this. Like, they're part of their job to look for these things.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Now, Lori, I got so much out of this the second time I've heard a lot of this stuff, and I'm just really grateful going to have you back in the mastermind. But you're doing a really cool thing now where you're doing some interviews of female millionaires. Why don't you tell folks a little bit more about that? And then we'll just obviously tell people where they can learn more about the wellness business that you have too.
Yeah. So one of the things that I really have felt strongly about is exposing our community to what's possible. And you can't model what you don't see. And for me, you know, I never saw, other than quite honestly, Rebecca Taubert and Shauna Kaminsky, like back in the day, yeah. I didn't see female examples of what was possible for me. I saw male examples, but it's not the same. When you're the mother and you have the kids, like you're the primary parent, it's different. It just is. And so I'm interviewing some parents, some females who are parents and some who aren't, and all of their businesses have hit the 1 million per year mark. And a lot of them have wildly surpassed it. And we're not going to talk about funnels or ads or anything. I really want to dive into the psychology of their mindset and what they had to shift and up level and let go of and get therapy about and how they structure their lives to really be in the position that they're in, because 2% of sort of self-owned businesses are owned by women who have hit the $1 million mark. Only just 2% of all of the businesses, which is a very low number. So we want to change that. And I think the very best way to be able to do that is by exposing women who want to get to a certain level of success, role models, because they're not as common. Female ones aren't as common as the male ones, sadly, but hopefully that's changing.
Well, yeah. And it is absolutely important for, you know, women who are mothers and women who are not mothers to have the role models, just like it's important for a young man. I knew it was important to have the role models. So I know it's a little bit early and you haven't done all the interviews yet, but is there a particular website that people can go and check out in the future to find the interviews?
They can just go to thewellnessbusinesshub.com. So anything that we do.
The wellnessbusinesshub.com, which is your main business as well. So yes. Why don't you tell people where they should start in your world?
They can go to thewellnessbusinesshub.com, and then the podcast that I host is there. And then also come send me a DM over on Instagram. It's the fastest way to sort of get in touch with me personally.
Okay, cool.
It's Lori Kennedy Inc. And that's on Instagram. So either of those two places are good. And then on our site too, there's links to join our community Facebook group, and anything that you would need is there.
Awesome, Lori. Absolutely amazing. Before we wrap it up, you know, if you were to give one piece of advice to somebody who's listening, who has started a business, maybe they're at six figures, you know, maybe they're halfway to $1 million, or, you know, maybe they just haven't got the thing going yet. You know, what piece of advice would you give to them or to a younger version of yourself?
Mm-hmm. Two things, actually. One, it's supposed to feel wildly uncomfortable the entire time. Like it's supposed to. And you get to a level where it doesn't like that. It feel like that anymore. And then in my experience, you start searching for ways to grow because, you know, like what Bader, like you never peak, right? Like it should feel some level of uncomfortable the whole time. That's number one. And number two, go and find the person that has the life, that has the values, that has the business model that you want to build, and pay them to learn from them. Stop wasting time trying to figure it out on your own, because you can't. Because if everybody could, they would. And that's not how this works. So those would be my two pieces of advice.
That's amazing. And I know that you have such an impact on people. You have such a great audience, because I spoke to your audience last year in Toronto. Mm-hmm. That was an amazing event. You had the marching band coming in. Was it, they were before you, right? And then you followed them in?
Yeah, that was super fun.
That was super awesome. Yeah. And we talked about how you're not having an event this year, and you planned that before all this stuff. So Lori, you're making the right decision. So we're very, very grateful and super, super grateful for your new mission of helping a lot of moms and women in general to grow that business and be the influence there that they need. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So listen, if you want to learn more about Lori, if you want to share the message of female entrepreneurs, or if you just simply want to become a better entrepreneur in general, you should follow Lori. You should learn more from her. You should apply those ideas that you got today. because I know I am, and we're using them in our company to grow. So listen, let me know what you thought of today's show. Should I interview more female entrepreneurs? Should I go back to my solo rants? Let me know what you want to hear that will help you go and grow. And if you want to go to the next level, what you should do is be like Lori and go to craigvalentine.com and apply to work with me like she did way back in, whether it was 2012 or 13 when we helped her launch, okay? So I helped her become the Oprah of her business and make more money and work less, and I know I can help you too. So go to craigvalentine.com and apply to work with me, and then head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star ranking and a 5-star review. And can't wait to see you soon back here on the show with another episode to help you go and grow.